Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to The Longest Night. We are a Game of Thrones show on the Podbreed Network, and we work with our friends at the Narth subreddit as well. My name is Rob, and if you don't know by now, then where the hell have you been? But I have seen every single episode of Game of Thrones at least half a dozen times.
And my name is Lizzie, and I'm watching every single episode of Game of Thrones for the very first time.
If you want to, you can find us on Twitter. We are at LongestNightGOT. That is at LongestNightGOT. Our title music, as always, provided by friend of the podcast, Edward Thomas. And you can find all of his available work in the description. This week, we are going to be looking back over the entirety of Season 7. We are doing our awards show, as we always do at the end of every season, where we take a look back over what's just happened over the previous few weeks. Fewer weeks for Season 7 than any other season before it. This, of course, being the first season to be shortened, rather than be the traditional length of 10 episodes. So, without really wasting any time, Lizzie, what are your general thoughts about Season 7?
I feel like some of the discussion we've had makes out that this is a bad season. It's not at all. It's really good. But as you say, that truncated length makes it feel like it's almost not a complete package, and like there are parts missing where we didn't get details that would have really fleshed out story, or it felt like we went around the map a little bit too quickly, and so we had a kind of only a sort of bird's eye view of events, whereas, you know, that last episode in particular, it feels like what could have been. It feels like we could have had a much deeper dive into these complex relationships and, you know, how they form and how they break down and how, you know, truths of the universe come up based on lies and all of these things. But yeah, I do think it does suffer somewhat from the shortened length, but that's not to say there aren't some stellar episodes in it.
It's a completely different style for the show, and the show has very different priorities to what it used to. And I think it's a bit of a tough adjustment period if you've been, you know, you're very much in the, you get used to the kind of momentum and speed that most episodes and seasons of Game of Thrones have, and then Very suddenly, sure. it does pick the pace up a little bit. But I do think that it makes up for that by being consistently capable of producing really powerful and entertaining TV that's always very exciting. Yeah. I think that even in Game of Thrones' weaker episodes, I remember when I was watching them for the first time, even during its weaker episodes, I was still so excited to see where the next scene would go, how the episode would end. What cliffhanger would we be left with? I think that HBO have finally realised the potential of the product, and they've loosened the purse strings, which means that it has Game of Thrones has become the ultimate home viewing experience during this little period of its run. I think that there was no other show on TV quite like Game of Thrones for being able to transport you and then immerse you in an entirely fictional universe, one that does not exist or is not reported to have ever existed on planet Earth. And it really, really does take you away, and you forget that you're not watching a cinema screen. Like when you see Drogon torching everything in sight during that Spoils of War sequence, like it's understandably regarded by like loads of fans and loads of critics as like the series' finest battle sequence. And I think that its increasing scale is really obvious during its moments of quiet as well. Like, the way that even little sets, like the Dragonstone painted table, the way that room is shot compared to how it was in Seasons 2 and 3. I think that as much as the spectacles are really entertaining and emotionally rewarding, I do think they have a lot of substance behind them. And they've got, I think this season knows that it has to deliver on a lot of years of waiting for things. Like the way that the story narrows down means that a lot of the momentum and drive from the season comes from all of these characters meeting each other for the first time and reuniting for the first time in three seasons or something like that. Not all of them work, as we talked about with Eastwatch particularly, But yeah. I'm talking about in the earlier parts of the season, like with Jamie and Olenna seeing each other again, and Sam and Jorah meeting up, and Jon and Daenerys meeting up, and all of these clashes of culture and personality. And I think that, you know, with the show in its post-adaptation era, as I was saying in that final episode that we covered for The Dragon and the Wolf, it's at its best when I think it really embraces the fact that it's fan fiction now, both the source material of the books and sort of the show itself. Like, there are moments in this season that come that fans of the novels have been waiting for ever since the mid-90s, just because it can. Like, David Benioff and Dan Weiss have control of this story now, and so they're like, right, fine. So, you know, Daenerys and Jon Snow need to meet each other and fall in love, and it's like, yeah, moving ahead of the books has allowed the show to deliver that kind of encounter and develop that relationship. Like, Olenna revealing that she was behind Joffrey's death. Like, you know, Jaime learns this news during that amazing final scene with Lady Olenna, Diana Rigg. Like, ancient illnesses like grayscale, like, they need to be cured. And it's like, yeah, Samwell Tarly reveals the mystery of grayscale, and like, all the major characters meet up and negotiate, and the White Walkers have finally breached the wall, and we see Daenerys ride Drogon into battle for the first time. Gendry comes back and we answer that meme, and every now and again it tips over a little bit too much, like we need to send 7 of our favourite characters beyond the wall to fight an army of 100,000 zombies. And it's like, okay, like, maybe we weren't demanding that, but like...
Maybe
that's the point where I pivot towards the criticisms and why season 7 is my least favourite season of Game of Thrones. I prefer... I'm not going to tell you how much I like season 8, but I like it more than season 7. I can at least give you that bit of information, because I don't want to affect your opinions about it too much based on how much I might like or dislike various aspects of it. But like, as much as I think, yeah, season 7's really entertaining and really terrific and exciting, its problems are easy to forgive, but yeah, I think that I don't envy Benioff and Weiss's position necessarily, because, you know, they have run out of material to adapt, and so it's their story now. And, like, I wouldn't say that this season has no detail whatsoever, but the episodes where detail is on the agenda, the ones that kind of tease us into the season, and then once you're there, like, the tempo just rockets away. And I think that episodes like Eastwatch really get exposed. Eastwatch and Beyond the Wall as a 1-2 is, I think it's my least favourite back-to-back episodes in the show. I think that the setup for the stuff Beyond the Wall isn't the best. And as much as I like the stuff Beyond the Wall, it's the stuff at Winterfell that kind of suffers in that episode. And I think both of those plot lines would have benefited from just having a bit more space, just a little bit more space. But I think that I still think it's a great season of TV. Like, it is my least favorite season of Game of Thrones, but it's my least favorite season of Game of Thrones. Like, it's my favorite show. Like, my least favorite season of Game of Thrones is, I like it just as much as like my favorite season of something like, I don't know, Lost or something like that. You know, I get the same level of enjoyment and emotional nourishment and enrichment out of it. So like, it's flawed, but the majority of its episodes, it uses that quickened pace to tell a story that's exciting, and it utilizes the status of the show as like a fan fiction to like do all these payoffs that we've been wanting. And I think it's a reminder as well that as much as people are able to pick holes in something like season 7 at the time, and even at the moment, although things are going to change later this year with things like House of the Dragon and potentially the Amazon Lord of the Rings series, there wasn't really another show on TV like this. And I think we were very spoiled with Game of Thrones. And I think season 7, as much as it's the weakest one, I think that spoiled us too.
Oh, for sure. I agree.
Okay, then. So we have our general plan. looking forward to the rest of the episode. So first of all, Lizzie, we're going to look at your loser of the season.
Okay.
I'm going to read out your losers of each episode, and then we're going to come to a decision, and you're going to place that. I mean, you wouldn't really give a loser of the season a star. You'd give it like a, I don't know, maybe like
a lump of coal.
Yeah, lump of coal. So for episode one, your loser of the week was Cersei Lannister. And for episode two, it was Euron Greyjoy. Then it was Cersei Lannister again. Then it was Daenerys Targaryen. Then it was Archmaester Ebrose. Then it was the Night King. And then it was, in the season finale, Littlefinger. So Cersei's got two votes, and everybody else has one. First time that Daenerys has ever appeared in Loser of the Week, and therefore the first time that she's ever appeared in our Loser of the Season vote, if she's in contention for that. So, who is your Loser of the Season, and why?
Well, just before that, you notice how much the cast has thinned out. You're not getting any more Kevin Lannisters or, you know, unnamed Son of the Harpy.
Yes. Carl Morrow.
Yes.
Lem Lemon Cloak.
Yes. I mean, I should preface this by saying that the Night King is clearly the strongest remaining villain in the show. He's easily the most immediate threat to the show's protagonists, and he presents more of an existential threat than a political or a tactical one. The problem is, he's boring. He's so boring. He's so utterly, completely, totally boring. He's been my loser of the week a number of times, purely because there's no other villain on his level, but I have so little to actually say about him that I can't possibly give him the award of loser of the season for this, for season 7, or any other season for that matter. Who knows, maybe season 8 has, you know, he might have more up his sleeve.
More in store, yeah.
We'll see. But before that, I want to cast your mind all the way back to the very end of season 6, where we witnessed an alliance like no other sailing towards Westeros with nothing to lose and a hell of a lot to gain. King's Landing was in ruins, the Lannister family was on the brink of extinction, and an illegitimate queen had just been crowned after she'd committed several acts of terrorism. This war was surely a foregone conclusion. And yet, my loser of the season is Daenerys Targaryen.
Ooh, okay. Why? Yeah.
So, Daenerys came into the season as the clear favourite to take the Iron Throne, in my opinion. And who knows, maybe she still will. I don't know. You might. But this has been kind of a Murphy's Law season for her. You know, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. Despite the strength of her army, she has three dragons, she has a fleet of ships, she has a collection of allies from several great houses all across the map. There's been no clear direction on her plan to take the Iron Throne whatsoever. It feels like a continuation of her time in Meereen, where the plan was simply to get rid of the slave owners and free the slaves, but not really expanded on beyond that. Hence, more complicated issues arising. And her eventual departure from Meereen, leaving the city war-torn and vulnerable to the rising tides of corruption. So, you know, we turn up at season 7, which, yeah, it's a disaster for Daenerys' super team, much like the 2021-22 NBA season was a disaster for the Los Angeles Lakers super team. I just thought I'd, I never thought I'd find myself comparing Daenerys to LeBron James, but there you go. In just 7 episodes, she's had a good chunk of her ships ambushed by Euron, she's lost powerful allies in Yara, Greyjoy and Ellaria Sand, and Olenna Tyrell, she's attacked Casterly Rock to no particular avail, she's somehow nearly got killed by Jaime and Bronn despite orchestrating an ambush against them and their army. She lost Viserion to the Night King, she realised that there's nobody in her line of succession after her, and she's also failed to convince Cersei to join a pact and fight the Night King alongside her. And sure, you could maybe blame Tyrion for some of their plans going awry, but in the end, who has the final say on those plans? And of course, why did Daenerys agree to Tyrion's more humane approach if she knew it would take longer for her to claim the throne that way? It's because Daenerys wants to be the person to leave the world a better place than it was before her. But she also wants to crush opposition and immediately silence any dissenting voices. Like, that's sort of firm but fair approach, in my opinion. That's just not knowing what kind of leader you ought to be, which results in her attempting to be both, but not really grasping the complexities and outcomes of either approach. She's a lot like Jamie. She has that main character syndrome where she's removed from the reality of the situation and instead imagines the world around her as what she wants it to be, something that's hers for the taking, you know, cheered on by adoring subjects and allies alike with no opposition, because why would anybody oppose the benevolent Queen Daenerys? And that position will inevitably break a character, and yeah, the signs are becoming very clear with season 7. Like, what hope do you have of overcoming Cersei Lannister if you're making all of the same mistakes and not learning anything from them?
Well, that is a terrific... I'm going to call it a monologue. That was a terrific monologue and a terrific explanation your vote. Because that is a bit of a contentious vote, obviously, because Daenerys
I would argue
that things are becoming murkier, but Daenerys has majoritarily been framed and written and coded as a character that we are supposed to sympathise with quite a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, to see through the sympathetic framing and come out with that conclusion, which I don't disagree with, is very, very interesting. And I was curious because, you know, you could have taken the easy option, gone for the Night King, gone for Cersei, something like that, but you've gone for something a bit more left field and you've explained it very well. And I would say that I agree with most of what you've said, because it's not necessarily Daenerys, for me, in my opinion, if I was going to name Daenerys as my loser of the season, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's because of the literal defeats that she's had. It's because of, as you have implied and explained also, that, and this is where I agree, that it's more how she's responded. The actions that she has taken. I think it's interesting, the stuff that she's left up to Tyrion and her advisors and the stuff that she's done herself this season. She has been happy to let Tyrion plan the invasion, but her response when it didn't quite go to plan was to torture Lannister army. Yeah. And then when she was taking the prisoners, she gave some men the option to bend the knee, and the ones that didn't bend the knee, it wasn't a case of sending them to the wall or sending them home to their families or with a promise that they wouldn't take up arms again. It was execution. And I think that Daenerys is the same person that she's always been. It's just that now she has the tools, and by tools I mean dragons and armies, to unleash fury. Yes. And to secure what she needs and what she feels is the next step. And if she were... I do think that as much as the end result is the same as beheading somebody and burning them alive with dragons, death is obviously the result there. Mm. In Westeros, beheading via... execution via beheading is... It's the done thing. I would say that it is socially acceptable. Even people who get executed in this show just kind of go down on their knees. There's very little fear on display because it becomes an honor thing. Whereas the visuals and the optics of burning somebody alive as opposed to beheading them, it does carry greater symbolic weight because of what dragons mean in Westeros and how they've been used before. And I'm not 100% sure if Daenerys is aware of this.
No.
And so, yeah, it's been interesting to watch as she gets closer and closer to the Iron Throne. The harder and harder it is for her to achieve that dream. Her vision for the world is up against the means by which she wants to achieve it. She wants to achieve, in her eyes, fairness and equality and a world where the common people are not crushed by this wheel. But to break the wheel, she needs to use those armies and dragons. Like, you know, she's tried one way and she gave it a go, but then it wasn't, well, we'll try again. It was to change the tactics, and it was to unleash these, what are essentially these weapons of mass destruction on the army that, in a revenge attack that took Highgarden. And so, yeah, it's been interesting to watch her slight transition over this season. I think she's always been caught between these two things, and now the reality, you know, the dream is in front of her, and so now it's push come to shove time. And when push comes to shove, it's interesting to watch these people behave. I think I've talked about this before in Game of Thrones, where for me, the question that hangs over Game of Thrones up to this point is, how far will you go in the pursuit of what you deem to be the greater good?
For sure.
I think you can apply that to a lot of characters, and applying it to Daenerys makes for a lot of interesting conclusions this season. All right, moving on to a more positive award. Your winner of the season, Lizzie. So, week by week, your winners have been different every single time. So, you've had Sandor Clegane, Arya Stark, Lady Olenna, Bronn, Davos Seaworth, Daenerys Targaryen, and Sansa Stark. So, one each for everybody there. Who is your winner of the season?
It's funny, I don't think of this much as a season where there's a clear winner compared to previous seasons.
I agree,
And like, even compared to last season, most of the main casts have remained fairly static throughout the season. There haven't been those great shifts in the landscape as there were in season six, nor have there been that many victories or moments of glory for the main cast.
Yeah, that's something I was thinking about as well, where season six finishes on some big victories for, like, Cersei, the Starks, Daenerys, like, you know, these big... Whereas season seven, the tone at the end of the season, it's lots of uncomfortable and failed negotiations and rescue missions and desperate... You know, like the way that the season ends, all the big glorious moments, like, they're more like rescue missions and really intense negotiations that don't go very well. And then the season ends with all hell breaking loose and ice demons coming to threaten everything that we've watched. So, yeah, carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, even my winner for this category hasn't been nailed on for the majority of the season, and would most likely have been a very different outcome if not for the finale. So, with that in mind, my winner of the season is, for the second season in a row, Sansa Stark.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I like that.
Many of the same reasons as season six, actually. You know, much like in season six, she's matured and grown as a character. She uses her past experiences to strengthen her resolve. But what cinched this award for her in season seven is how she learnt from Littlefinger's scheming ways to spin webs of her own and trap him just as he was starting to push his luck a little bit too much. And, like, sure, the Arya feud storyline was a little bit rushed and a little bit underdeveloped. And, yeah, there were definitely some scenes missing. And, yeah, it's a bit unfortunate. But the payoff was worth it. It's two seasons and two victories for Sansa over people who took advantage of her. But there is one more name I can think of. I wonder.
Who's that name?
Well, we'll have to see, won't we?
Could you... Venture, you know, could you venture a suggestion?
Well, okay, full disclosure, I don't know anything that happens in season eight, don't worry. But, of course, both Arya and Sansa have a bit of a grudge for one Cersei Lannister.
Okay, yeah. All right then, yeah, we'll see how that goes. I agree with your winner of the season, actually. I think it would have been very interesting if you'd picked Daenerys as well, and we could have gone around all the ways. Well, that's the thing with Daenerys this season. She lands in both categories. You named her as loser of episode four and winner of episode six.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Daenerys that we've seen this season, where the inner complexities that she's always had, we're now getting a chance to see them. And so it does mean that, yeah, there are some dividing lines in Daenerys' character that are yet to be fully established. But with Sansa, yeah, I agree. I think she is the only character, really major character, that lands a big win this season. She overcomes something she... Whereas other characters don't really. Like, even something like Jon and Daenerys, like, overcoming, I don't know, like, the stuff with the Night King and, like... But there's a lot of loss for Daenerys this season, and there's a lot of pain for Daenerys this season. And with Jon...
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a lot of desperate rescue mission stuff going on, even when him and Daenerys are like, oh, you know, we love each other and, you know, let's make babies or whatever, you know, let's have sex, like, that sort of thing. There's even that moment where Tyrion sort of looks on and goes like, hope there's not another dynasty being started in there. And like, and that's at the same time that we find out that he is literally having sex with his aunt. And also that we find out that he is the greatest threat to her claim. So like, it's all of these big triumphant moments for other characters are not that, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, we talked at great length about how, like, at the end of season six, there was a lot of big victories that seemed like big victories on the surface, but then when you just kind of scratch beneath the surface ever so slightly, you found out that those victories were kind of hollow, or they were tinged with a darkness or a sense of regret or a lack of catharsis. But I think that with season seven, other than Sansa, I think getting the victory over Littlefinger, it's not entirely clean, but I think it's the closest we get to a clean win this season. And Sansa having to deal with the fact that her brother is not who he used to be and all of that, and her sister's not who she used to be, and even she's not who she used to be.
No, not at all.
They do at least reach a resolution at Winterfell, and Sansa is the spearhead of that.
Yes, yeah, some good comes of it, at least.
Yeah. All right, then. Probably a quick one for this next category. Your best moment of season seven.
I mean, I've tried to pick a nominee from every single episode.
Before you let me know about what each moment is from each episode, about how many years ago was it now? It was in January 2020. I did a Game of Thrones greatest moments, and I did...
Oh, really?
On Medium, and I did it, and I did a moment from every episode from every single season, and so I want to see if yours match up with mine. So,
okay,
what was your favourite moment from the first episode?
It was Sandor buries the bodies.
I have the exact same pick.
Yes.
So interesting. What is your favourite from episode two?
From episode two, it's actually sort of two moments in one. But it's Arya's return to Winterfell. Well, her decision, at least. So there's her reunion with Hot Pie, and then her encounter with Nymeria as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Mine was Theon Greyjoy jumping off the ship at the end of the episode. So we're not matched on that one. From episode three, what is your favourite moment?
I think this is going to be a fairly obvious one, but it's going to be Lady Olenna's final confession.
I have the same one, yes.
What else could it be?
Yeah, that's really, really tremendous.
It
is. From episode four?
Again, I think a fairly obvious one, although it's kind of the overarching thing, and there are plenty of great smaller moments in it. It's the battle at the Rose Road.
Yes, yeah, same. That is also my pick from that episode.
Yep.
Okay, from episode five, there were so many moments in this episode that it feels like it's hard to choose, but which one have you gone for?
Yeah, if anything, there's almost too many moments in this episode. I found it really hard to actually sort of, you know, pick one out of it. I went with... John stroking Drogon.
Oh, exactly the same.
Yes.
Drogon allows Jon Snow to pet him, is what I've put. Yeah. Awesome. Glad that we matched on that one. Okay. Episode six, Beyond the Wall. What did you go for?
I went with the battle Beyond the Wall, even if I don't think it's one of the better battles in the season, particularly not compared to the battle at the Rose Road. But yeah, It's spectacular, nothing amazing. It's spectacular in the sense of it being a spectacle.
Yes, I understood what you meant, yeah. Mine was Daenerys rejecting Tyrion's suggestions of democracy. That That whole conversation at Dragonstone is, yeah, really, really super.
Oh, you're right. I should have gone with that.
Well, we didn't match, and it's okay. Oh. And from the finale, what moment have you gone with?
I actually had three in my nominations, but I'll narrow it down to one. I'll go with Littlefinger's execution.
Cool. We didn't match on that one. I went with Jaime leaving Cersei.
Oh, yes. End. Yeah, that was one of my other ones.
Oh, good. Okay, so we kind of half matched on that one. We'll give ourselves half a point.
Yeah.
For that one. So, out of all those moments that you've let us know about, which one was your favourite of the whole season?
And despite all of those nominees, it's a fairly easy one. It's the Battle of the Rose Road.
Yeah. I mean, we extolled the virtues of it at the time, but, like, Jesus.
Yeah. Honestly, please, like, I don't want to go into it too much here, but if you've not listened to our episode 4 review, go and listen to that.
And then watch the scene on YouTube. Because
it's so good.
Why not? Or yes. You know, whack the Blu-ray out and get it on that big screen. Do it the full justice.
And we also had a discussion there about Daenerys' motivations, like we've had, you know, earlier in this episode.
Yeah. Always worth going back.
Absolutely.
All right then, now we come on to the bit of the award show where we talk about we rank every episode from the season. So there's only 7 this season, but we still have to rank them. So our least favourite episode of the season combined was episode 5, Eastwatch, where, yeah, there was just that there is too much in that episode, I think.
It's too much Game of Thrones.
Too much Game of Thrones, yes. I think spread out over 2 or 3 episodes, I think all of those moments would have been given the time to really feel as emotionally heavy as I think the episode wanted them to, but having them all bump into each other, it didn't really work that much for either of us.
No.
Next up is episode 6, Beyond the Wall, which I liked a little bit more on this time round, but the stuff at Winterfell I've never quite gotten on board with or gotten to grips with, to be honest.
Yeah, really drags it down. Shame, really. It could have been, I mean, it is a solid episode aside from that.
Yes, I would agree, yeah. Okay, next up in 5th place is episode 3, The Queen's Justice, which starts with Jon Snow and Daenerys meeting each other for the first time and ends with, obviously, Lady Olenna's terrific final scene in the show. But I think we talked about at the time, Lizzie, the stuff that happens in between those two things is good, but, like, it does start to move at a speed that you're sort of like, oh, having a bit of trouble keeping up with this. Like, what are your thoughts quickly on those?
Yeah, I agree. I remember the start and I remember the end, but the rest of the episode is a little bit of a blur.
Yeah. Okay. In 4th place is the season premiere, Dragonstone.
Mm.
Very quiet episode, little bit of map hopping, but it's quiet and it's contemplative. And I think at the time, we realised that it was very much an episode about people who've just finished with one war and aren't ready for another, but the dragons coming from one direction and the White Walkers coming from another direction means that whether they're ready or not, they're going to have to fight in another one.
Yeah, I wonder what it's like to watch this episode back to back with The Winds of Winter.
Yeah, bit of a come down.
It feels like a direct sequel, but like you say, it is a lot more not sedate, but you know what I mean. It's more melancholy.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And also Ed Sheeran's in it, doing a fine cameo.
Of course.
In 3rd place is the 2nd episode of the season, Stormborn, which ends with the battle at sea. It features Arya deciding to come home to Winterfell, her reunion with Hot Pie. Lots of nice moments in that episode.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, getting our runner-up award. It is the season finale, The Dragon and the Wolf, episode 7. Yeah, I think that these top two, I don't think anybody's going to argue with what we've decided to be the top two.
No, and I feel like for some people, this would probably be the number one.
Yeah, I think so.
I could see why.
Yeah, I think that return to a more kind of languid season 2, 3-ish pace the long scenes dedicated to just people talking across the table. It's a nice reminder of what the show used to be like in its early days, before we get all of the action at the end of the episode that reminds us what the show has become and where it's going with the White Walkers coming through the wall. And our favourite episode of the season, taking the throne, is episode 4, The Spoils of War. Even before all the stuff goes down with Daenerys and Jaime and Tyrion and Drogon and Bronn and all of that fiery action, I just love everything in this episode. I love Arya going back to Winterfell and sparring with Brienne, everything that happens with Bran and Littlefinger. It's really, really tremendous. What do you make of it?
And, you know, there's also Mira leaving. There's all the Dragonstone caves with the Jurassic Park music. So many great moments in this. I completely, because obviously your mind goes straight to the battle. But, yeah. Also, just like Cersei's little chat with Tycho and Astoris, and, you know, the as soon as the gold arrives that you don't pick up on until you go back. You know, yeah, it's a great episode, that.
Yeah. So, just before we go back in time a little bit and we watch the trailers, and you'll notice the Z on the end of that, the two trailers for Season 7, Lizzie, I just wanted to let you know that Season 7 is above Season 5 in your numerical rankings thus far.
Hmm.
So far, your favourite season has been Season 4.
Of course.
Your next favourite season after that was Season 6.
Yeah.
And after that, it was Season 3.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it's Season 1.
Yeah.
After that, it is Season 2. Then Season 7. And then Season 5. And so we all wonder where 8 is going to rank alongside the seasons that precede it. So,
not long to wait.
No, not long to wait at all. There were two trailers for Season 7. And now there were two trailers for Season 6 as well. There was an official HBO one and there was a Red Band trailer. And I didn't really bother watching the Red Band trailer last time because, you know, it's not essential. Like, we watched the HBO one, so no big deal if we miss out on the other one. But, in my opinion, the second trailer that was done, that was called Winter is Here, is a superb trailer. Like, it is what I think it is my favourite Game of Thrones trailer, and I did want to, on our show, I did want to do it some justice. So, first, we're going to watch the official HBO one that's uploaded by the Game of Thrones YouTube channel. That was uploaded, can you believe, on the 24th of May, 2017, almost 5 years ago,
Jesus.
This trailer. So we're going to get that started. Lizzie, let me know when you've got it loaded up. I'll do a countdown, and then we'll be on our way.
Yeah, I've got it loaded up.
All right, then. So I'll do a quick countdown, and then we're away. So 3, 2, 1, and play.
Enemies to the east. Enemies to the west. Enemies
Here
to
I
the
am.
South.
Stuck in the middle with
enemies
you.
To the north. Whatever stands in our way, we will defeat it. We're the last Lannisters. The last ones you count.
It was like that line. It was like, yeah, the show is narrowing down. Like, not many left.
I was born to rule the Seven Kingdoms. And I will.
You would have seen the Unsullied attacking Casterly Rock.
Gone, yet here you stand.
But then I wouldn't have known what Casterly Rock looked like.
Best hope against the no, although people were breaking it down at the time, like, oh, there's Lannister flags on it, there must be Casterly Rock.
yeah, true.
If we don't put aside our enmities and band together, we will
die. You would have seen stuff from episode 6.
Jesus.
It doesn't matter.
You would have seen
the
Dothraki, oh, Jesus, I'm glad we didn't watch this. Jorah's hand. So you would have seen John going beyond the wall. Like, what?
The Great War is here.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this season really does make... I think this trailer really does make the point that, like, conflict is coming. Like, conflict is on the way. And, like, I can't imagine what you would have sat there thinking, like... Well, what would you have sat there thinking if you'd seen that and not seen any of the actual episodes?
I mean, I actually thought that... It might just be that I've not watched one of their trailers for a while, but I thought that had a bit of a slower pace. I actually kind of preferred that because... Hmm. Like, I find that some of the previous ones have just bombarded you with shots. It's like, here's a shot, here's a shot, here's a shot. And, like, you can't sort of focus on anything. And it's clearly built for those kind of articles and videos where they break the trailer down into these tiny parts. But
yeah,
just watching it, it's impossible to really say anything about it because you can't pluck anything out.
Hmm.
But, yeah, it does very much make it look like... the war is going to happen this season between Daenerys and Cersei. And, well, it does and it doesn't.
Yeah. I think that's the general feeling of being taken... I think on some level, this is why season 7 is not as satisfying. And I think it's a deliberate move, which is that it promises something that doesn't quite happen.
Yeah.
It promises a coming together... But what you get is lots of little... You get lots of little coming togethers. Like, you don't get the big one yet. It's like it's...
No.
Which is why I always kind of view season 7 and 8. I wish to this day that they had... I think there was just such a big gap between them that they couldn't really do this. But I wish they'd marketed it just like Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or... You know, like, or BoJack Horseman or something like that. You know, where we wouldn't be going into season 8 right now. We would be going into season 7 part 2.
Yeah, it's like Ozark at the minute as well, yeah.
So, like, you do get this sense that if you get told that, like, it's season 7 part 1, I think you go in with slightly diminished expectations, which means that, like, oh, we're not going to see the big revelations this season. We're going to leave those for later. And I do think that just calling it season 7, people did expect something that just didn't quite arrive. And I do see season 7 and 8 as one long 13-episode, like, big chunk at the end of the story. It's like act 3. Slightly shorter than everything else. And yeah, I think that trailer, it does kind of say, like, oh, dragons are in battle and there's going to be a battle at sea and there's going to be a battle beyond the wall and, oh, there's going to be so many battles, you won't know where to look. And, like, and the season ends up not quite feeling like that. But I do quite like the fact that as much as this season is all about big armed conflicts at the end of some episodes, in the end, it all kind of ends with a negotiation. And a lot of question marks. Not very decisive. It's the bit before the end. And the bit before the end is always... I've always found that, like, in TV shows I love, the bit just before the end is my least favourite bit of it. Like, my least favourite season of Mad Men is 6. And my least favourite season of The Sopranos is the bit before the very end. Like, the first chunk of season 6...
Yeah.
Of The Sopranos, and it's kind of the same with BoJack Horseman, and it's kind of the same with Breaking Bad, where, like, my least favourite bit of Breaking Bad is that start of season 5 when it takes forever to recover from everything that happens at the end of season 4. And it's historically that, and with Game of Thrones, my least favourite bit of Game of Thrones is season 7, the bit before the end when they've really got to manoeuvre everything into place, and that kind of takes priority, and it makes it maybe less emotionally satisfying. So we're going to see what the second trailer promises now, this Winter is Here trailer.
Okay.
So I will once again do a quick countdown when you're ready.
Okay. Don't play. No, go back. Okay, I'm ready.
All right then. 3, 2, 1, and go.
Don't fight in the north. or the south.
I think it's the music that makes this trailer.
Yeah, it's the music from Thingy, yeah. Isn't it? Winds of Winter.
Yeah, Light of the Seven. Mind. See, John's beyond the wall.
Yep. Daenerys the Dragonstone.
Yeah. But it's just mad that it's something from episode 6 being plonked right at the start of the trailer. Remember people breaking that trailer down, that Jaime was at Highgarden and we all sort of worked out that that was what was going to happen. Together,
against their common enemy, despite their differences, together. We need to do the same if we're going to survive. Because the enemy is real. It's always been real.
So you get that same shot of the Unsullied invading Castle Rock. So you get the shot of Jaime on the horse. Like, bloody hell. John beyond the wall again. A shot from episode 7 there.
Oh yeah, there's another one from episode 7.
Yeah. This bit though.
The snows fall and the white winds blow. The lone wolf dies, but the pack survives.
And a little thing, little production note there. That shot of John, they've edited the Night King out of it for the trailer.
Right.
And I'm not sure why they did that, because it's like, oh, John's beyond the wall. Clearly he must be facing up against the Night King. Like, that's where your mind would go. But they took him out for some reason. But I love that moment. I think that's my favourite moment in all Game of Thrones trailers, where Sansa says the line about the lone wolf dies but the pack survives, while John is being taken away on that horse. And it's just this moment of, like, there's a little bit of worry about who the state of the person who's on that horse and, like, what the hell has happened beforehand to make that happen while Sansa's speaking such poetic, stark words. And, yeah, what was your impression of that trailer? Do you kind of prefer it to the other one, or do you prefer the HBO one, as you say, because it was a bit more slow?
I mean, this was slow as well. This is slower than the first one. It does give me more of a sense of what the season was actually like, in that, yes, Daenerys and Cersei were plotting something against one another, but the real threat was still beyond the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is that kind of existential threat rather than just, here's another war.
All right, then. Well, because this is the last bit before we begin the end, I just want to ask you, now that we're very close to the end and things are kind of narrowing down, do you have a general outline for where you expect the season to go?
Oh, God.
Like a general sort of, like, you know, like the White Walkers have come through the wall. Jon and Daenerys are heading back to Winterfell, and Cersei's kind of on her own in King's Landing. So how do you see the tide of the season? How do you see the tide moving as the season progresses?
Ooh, that's very tough. You've got to admit that is a very difficult question, but...
Yeah.
If I'm just thinking purely of, like, how Season 7 ended, I don't think we're going to see Jaime for a couple of episodes. I feel like he's going to pop up at an important moment.
Okay.
You know, when the North needs him, I feel like he will be there as support, maybe. But who knows? I could be way off. In terms of Jon and Daenerys, I do wonder, maybe there might be, like, a sign that she's pregnant, but there's no, like, cast iron guarantee. You might see a bit more friction in their relationship as Daenerys gets frustrated, but, you know, obviously they don't have time on their hands. For Cersei, we're probably going to see the what's the Braavos army called,
the Golden Company.
The Golden Company, yeah. So we'll start to see them a little bit more, and I think they might start to play more of a role, and you might get another ambush. You might get revenge for the Battle of the Rose Road with Cersei kind of, you know, planting something for Daenerys to walk into, a kind of trap, and then they attack, you know, take out the enemy while he still can. And as she said, they will deal with the Night King in turn. And as for the Night King, well, he's approaching the north and therefore Winterfell. But they've also got Bran in the north, and Bran is kind of like a magnet to him, which is worrying.
Okay, yeah, interesting. So, you don't have to answer this.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask you anyway, because ahead of the final season, it was the question on everybody's lips.
Okay.
Who, when the series concludes, who will be sat on the Iron Throne? And if you say something like the Night King, then as a way of saying like, well, the White Walkers win, then I'll accept that.
Okay. Ooh. You know, it's one of those things. Do you go with an obvious answer, or do you go with maybe something left, slightly more left field? But I think maybe Jon, knowing what we know about him now,
yeah,
and knowing that he is the true heir to the throne.
Is that your obvious answer or your left field answer?
That's my obvious answer. My left field answer would have been Sansa.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I'll take those as your two answers. So your obvious answer is Jon, and your slightly left field one is Sansa.
Yeah. But
yeah, okay.
Let it be known that I don't think it'll be Cersei.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. I can I can see you thinking there. So, yeah, okay.
Oh, Rob. Yeah? I have a question for you.
Yes.
Season 8, what color is it?
White.
White. Like just white.
Just white, pure white.
Wow. Okay.
As you will see in our logos, there'll be a bit of a change in our logo for the final season.
Yeah.
So, if our interview with Fabian Wagner was published a few days ago, obviously he did 8 episodes of Game of Thrones as director of photography, mostly alongside Miguel Sapochnik. He did The Gift, Hard Home, Winds of Winter, Battle of the Bastards, and he's done 2 episodes of season 8, which we have not yet watched and will not reveal. I will not reveal the titles of those so as to not spoil Lizzie, but you can go ahead and listen to that. We talked to him about the work he's done on Game of Thrones, the fact that he's been called up for House of the Dragon to work alongside Miguel again, all sorts of things. So, yeah, go and give that a listen. Okay, so season 7 is over. It's done. And we're now facing straight at the end. I did want to say as well that can you believe this? That we have managed to line up our schedule so perfectly that our episodes for each episode of season 8 will be released on the same date, exactly 3 years to the date that the episodes themselves premiered on HBO. The season 8 premiere was the 14th of April 2019. And we'll be publishing our episodes on for the first episode on the 14th of April 2022. So it'll be a good full 3-year retrospective for me. And at the start of our episodes, I may talk about where I was at that point and where I watched the episode and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
All right, then. We will see you for Season 8, Episode 1, called Winterfell. And, yeah, we'll just see you next time. Thank you very much for listening.
See ya.